Welcome to the Quest Podcast, proudly presented by the Muscular Dystrophy Association as part of the Quest family of content. I'm your host, Mindy Henderson. Together, we are here to bring thoughtful conversation to the neuromuscular disease community and beyond about issues affecting those with neuromuscular disease and other disabilities and those who love them. We are here for you to educate and inform, to demystify, to inspire, and to entertain. We are here shining a light on all that makes you, you. Whether you are one of us, love someone who is, or are on another journey altogether, thanks for joining. Now let's get started.
Well, it is February and romance is in the air. So today I have three of our incredibly talented MDA ambassadors with me to talk about all things dating and marriage. So because ladies first, we have Nora Ramirez, who lives in California and was diagnosed with Celanon-related myopathy at the age of 9 years old. She's one of four siblings with SEPN1RM, and Nora is a dog mom, woman after my own heart, of two, and a wife, a daughter, and an aunt. Next up, we have KL Cleeton, who is an entrepreneur, get this, a poker professional. So interesting. I don't think I've ever talked to a poker professional before. And an influencer committed to empowering individuals to realize their potential. He focuses on startup development and motivates others to overcome their limitations, achieving more than they could have imagined. And last, but certainly not least, I have Justin Lopez, who is a 30-year-old disability advocate and operations manager. Diagnosed with limb-girdle muscular dystrophy, or LGMD2B, at the age of 13, Justin has dedicated much of his life to advocating for disability rights and promoting inclusivity in both personal and professional spaces. As a son, brother, husband, and father, Justin understands the importance of community and support. Thank you all so much for being here. Everybody who's probably listening is ready for us to get on with the show and talk about all of the dating and marriage and relationship tips. So lots to talk about. I'm going to jump in. So since we're here to talk about relationships, of course, as I already mentioned, each of you are ambassadors with MDA and are clearly accomplished individuals. Would each of you mind letting me know, let's confirm your status, married, single, otherwise? Justin, let's start with you. You're married, correct?
Yes, married and have a son who is actually turning 3 in March.
So. Oh my gosh, such a fun age. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And Nora, let's go to you next.
Yes, I'm married. We've been married for 7 years and are 2 dog babies.
Wonderful. What kind of dogs? Super important.
Maltese girl and a full wolfhound boy.
Oh my gosh. So a little one and a huge one.
Medium, yeah.
Medium? Okay. Wonderful. And then KL?
So I'm not married, but I am in a wonderful relationship with someone from the Austin area. It's a long distance thing that we see each other as often as we can, and we're coming up on 8 months.
Great. Okay. Well, so let's just jump into it. So I'm going to let whoever wants to go first go. You know, it's someone's got to be the brave one. But tell me a little bit about your experience. Let's talk about dating, navigating dating. I mean, we all know dating in general comes with challenges. It's not easy for anybody. But then living with a disability, every now and then it can make things just a little bit more complicated. So, what's your dating journey been like? Who wants to go first?
Yeah, I can go first. I would say, sure. And mine was a while back. I've been married for 5 years now, and been with my wife since 2016. So it's been a while, but I would say that, you know, dating was like even going through high school and then into college, it was unique. It was more of like, I tried to keep it as traditional as possible. When my condition would come up at the time, I kind of initially began to kind of hide it actually, stated that it was more of like a leg injury, which I did have, but obviously when I had the leg injury kind of progressed and we learned to what it was, which is limb girdle. But at the time I really just kind of kept it as, oh, it's just a leg injury. And then as depending upon how deeper the relationship got, and that's when I kind of opened up and kind of explored and explained more of my condition.
Yeah, you know what? And you make a really good point, because I think, you know, that sometimes the society that we're living in, we have to downplay bits and pieces of who we are. And, you know, whether that's a disability or something else, I think that it's a theme that probably can resonate with a lot of people, you know, sort of having to, not being allowed almost to embrace all of who we are, right?
Yeah. And I would say just to add on to it, like I lived on campus in Ohio, which is Bowling Green State University. And so I would be walking to class, and at the time I was walking in, I may have crutches or something like that. And someone may stop me and ask me like, hey, like what happened there? Are you okay? And, you know, for someone who's just asking like simply what's wrong, I might give them a short answer like, oh yeah, I tore my ACL or something like that. Versus someone who really wanted to like sit down and like actually understand, so that kind of also gauged whether I give you maybe a short story or maybe a long-term story too. So those are things that also played a factor. Yeah.
Well, and to that end, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you know, no one is entitled to our story. Right. And so, you know, it's while I say that it's a shame that I think a lot of people in a lot of ways have to, you know, feel like they have to hide or downplay pieces of themselves. You know, I think a lot of times we kind of want someone to earn the right to know our story as well, even though it's not something that should be tied to shame. You know, there's a trust factor there before we share. So Nora, let's go to you. What was dating like for you?
I feel like for me, it was challenging just putting myself out there. Even aside from my disability, my personality is very, even more back then, very shy and very just scared of people in the world and everything. So I try to focus on that, and I try to not even try to think about my disability and how I look and what questions they're going to ask, like about all the what ifs and whatnots. I try to not think about that. Like I already have this struggle to even get started. So that was my main focus, on building confidence and just going on dates, where there were friend dates or getting to know each other dates. And working on that was my main focus. And during dating stages, I never brought up my disability, even though it was visible and noticeable a lot of things. Like I needed to ask for help sometimes, but they didn't ask questions. I never had anyone I dated ask questions, and I just didn't bring it up myself until my husband, when things got serious and we were in a relationship, then that's when I opened up to him about it.
Yeah, I see a theme here beginning to emerge. So I'm going to come to you in just a second, Kale. But Justin and Nora, did you guys date a lot? Did you what kind of volume are we talking about?
I did in college. Yeah, I did. I wanted to really get to know like what things I liked and didn't like in a partner and dating and all of that. I think I was scared of committing to something that work out, and it's like being vulnerable with someone and then it turns out we're not compatible. So I wanted to kind of do a lot of practiced just dating, but they were just casual dates.
Well, I think that's important anyway. I mean, just the, like you said, knowing what you want, what you don't want, what's important to you, that takes a minute, and it takes, you know, a lot of experience and dating different people. But Justin, did you date a lot?
Yeah. I would say I definitely did. I would say that, similar to what Nora just said, like, as far as, like, you know, we're just as people as everyone else, right?
Yeah.
So learning what you like, what you don't like about an individual, and trying to, you know, find that connection that's genuine. But I also think a connection that's a genuine, that you can trust even at a higher level in comparison to maybe other relationships or traditional relationships, because obviously as we kind of embarked on our journeys with the ones that we have now, it requires a lot more additional confidence in that significant other to do some additional responsibilities, mm-hmm. Different things of that nature. So I would say that definitely early on, I was definitely, you know, dating a lot as far as like getting to know people, things of that nature. And then towards my later years of college, I really wanted to, you know, settle down and find someone that I knew that I had a lot of trust in, and I did.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so, KL, tell us a little bit about your dating journey. I know that you've got a girlfriend. It sounds like you've been together for a little bit, but did you date a lot before this?
Well, you took that trend. I'm going to now buck said trend, and the exact opposite of Nora and Justin. So my disability, I have a spinal muscular atrophy, technically type 2, but it's only because I've outlived type 1. It's fun. So my disability, my relationship with my disability was much more in the forefront. I most of the listeners probably are aware of what SMA is, but for those who aren't, I compare it to something like being paralyzed from the neck down, but I feel everything because I have no movement whatsoever. Uh-huh. And so because of that, my fear, my struggle was that burden complex. I was going to be a burden for a romantic partner, or, you know, nobody could ever really see past, the wheelchair and the super skinny arms and all of that good stuff. And what I found was the few times that I did put myself out there, it just led to kind of heartbreak after heartbreak. Not in the, like you see in the movie where, somebody asks and they have to turn a lot of men, they show up and throw eggs at your head. Like, I'm not saying it's ever like that. We're two good friends, things like that. But eventually, through a lot of time and work on myself, what I found was that I couldn't expect other folks to find me, desirable as a romantic partner if I didn't do the work to find myself worthy of that sort of compassion and that sort of romance and that sort of love. So I did that. I spent a lot of time on that work. And then whenever I did meet Sadia, we met online like basically everybody does nowadays, it seems like, especially, in a post-COVID era. I kind of took a new tact. I took a new mindset into that. There was an expectation of like, ooh, I'm looking for something or someone. Basically, it was just, getting to know somebody new. And in the process of that getting to know someone, I was completely open and completely vulnerable in a way that I hadn't been before. And that I was really lucky because that allowed me to kind of get to know this person and for her to get to know me on not a superficial level, but on a deeper personal level. And, you know, she knew about my disability literally from, like, message one. I was very open about, you know, everything. Like, you can see my literature and my avatar and my peer headshots and things like that. So it wasn't like a surprise or anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that was my journey. My path was first convincing myself I deserved that sort of love, and then changing my own behavior to make it where other people were able to see that I felt like I deserved it as well.
Well, and that's so important, what you just said, because you know, I also live with SMA, and so I can relate to so much of what all of you are saying. And I've had my own experiences and things, but I think that I've talked to a number of people over the years who have been sort of forced into that self-acceptance, and, you know, as part of their dating journey. And I think that there's actually, that can be a little bit of a gift, you know, for if you want to sort of turn this all on its ear. I think there are other people out there who may never get there with the self-acceptance and self-love and all of the things that, like you're saying, are so important that need to come first before someone else can love you. And so I think that's maybe one of the sort of hidden gems or hidden gifts that some of us in this community come by because of the journeys that we're on. So you've all kind of touched a little bit on how you approached sharing about your disability with a potential partner. Are there any specific, like, strategies or conversations that you found helpful in opening and understanding and creating an open and understanding environment from the beginning or near the beginning?
I think that it was like, I think it was very important to kind of talk about what kind of situation that, you know, explain what muscular dystrophy was from the beginning and making sure, you know, my wife had a solid understanding of what it was. And then, because there was obviously with muscular dystrophy, there's a umbrella, a variety of different types, right? And so understanding my particular type was important to be able to kind of explain, because I think what we envisioned down the future was that, you know, if in a situation where she needs to explain it to someone, and sorry, my dog is going to go, she would need to be able to kind of talk about it and understand it. So I think we talked about exactly like what were limitations and what did those look like too at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Norit?
Yeah, for me, communication is huge. So I feel like I made sure to set up just communication in general. Once we got serious, like me and my husband, after the dating stage, and kind of worked my way up to telling him about my disability. And then when I did, it didn't feel, it was still a little scary, but it didn't feel as, because we were already used to communicating and being able to talk about anything. Nothing was off topic. So then when I was talking about it with him, it was kind of going down bullet points. It felt like I just teaching him. So I was in a mini class about muscular dystrophy, and then I made sure to ask him if he had any questions, because I didn't know if I talked too fast or if it was just too much information and he didn't hold any of it. So I made sure to ask. He didn't have questions, and then we just continued like normal, but he's still continuously learning, because some things it's different to talk about it and hear about it versus see it and experience it. So a lot throughout the years and learn a lot, and now he's a great advocate.
I think learning as you go along, because at least for me, no one else in my family ever had it. So this was a learning thing for me as well. And at the time when we first started dating, at least when my wife and I started dating, I was still walking. I was able to take walks and steps and things like that. And then I progressed into using crutches a little bit more, then using loft strands, and then loft strands to use to, a wheelchair, then a wheelchair now to where I am now, which is a power chair. So like we had this, she's seen the journey of it all. So that was interesting and learning as a couple, like how the dynamic shifts.
Nice. Kale, talk to me about first dates, because just to kind of kick us off, when I would go on first date, there can be a lot of anxiety there, particularly as a wheelchair user or somebody with a disability. It's, all of the questions, how am I going to get there? And are we going to sit somewhere that's accessible? And, what are they going to want to do something that's not accessible to me? And all of those kinds of things. How in the past have you approached first dates, and what kind of wisdom can you give our listeners about handling those situations?
Yeah. So, obviously, first of all, fellow SMAer, I did not know that. High five, you and I. I think that what it comes down to, and I'll just use my first date with Savia as a really good example, because I think it was a really positive experience, but for some really key reasons that I think are reproducible. First of all, she's amazing. So there's that.
I feel like you like her just a little bit.
Just a little bit. But also, I'm not gonna lie, very fortunate that she is able-bodied, but she worked in the accessibility space. Mm-hmm. She is a developer that worked on digital accessibility for a large portion of her career.
That's so cool.
She had some basic knowledge and understanding, which is really, really helpful. But even more than that, having a partner that is just curious, interested in problem solving, interested not in what can or can't we do, but hey, this thing isn't really doable. Is there something we can do that's adjacent or, adapting
in
some way so we can do it? And so what we ended up doing was our first date was very unusual by societal standards because, well, first of all, she flew from Texas
to
where I live, in the middle of Illinois. So already she's making a massive leap of faith to like that I'm not a serial killer actor or something like that. Because of the weight of that 1,000 mile distance, we talked a lot about everything before she ever came to visit. That was kind of like the last step to like, is this real? Is this a thing that translates? We did something stupid. We drove over to St. Louis, which was about 100 miles away, which was like a really big step by itself because, she had to be shown like how I need to be moved. If something needs to, be adjusted, she kind of had to learn some caregiver stuff. But she, it's like, this is part of it. My eyes are open. I know what this means. I'm not coming at this blind. But, because of that communication and because of that, kind of understanding the adult, it made it so much easier. And we went over to St. Louis. We had ice cream. We went to a stupid children's museum that was closed for the day that had opened for a fundraiser. So it was a bunch of like zoos and a children's museum. It was fantastic. It was a blast. And yeah, and we, you know, we got a boatload of photos, obviously, mm-hmm. from that first day. But I think really the reason that was so positive from my perspective, and the reason it's replicatable for other folks, is because it was foundational on two basic things, which is curiosity and communication. And because each of us had both of those things, I think it made the evening, you know, something we'll never forget.
She sounds special. I feel like you should hold on to her.
That's fine too.
Yeah. Nora, what are some of your favorite, like, first date activities from, you know, back when you were dating?
Some of my favorites were, because of my overthinking part, restaurants that I was familiar with, that I knew what food had, how the layout was. So I think I was kind of in charge. I like to take control of where it would be, just so I knew and I didn't have anxiety about being there. I also love nature. So another one of my favorites was going to the park, specifically the parks that I liked and the areas and tables and chairs to sit at. Because I think it also helped that there's things going on in the park. There's people, there's dogs chasing a ball, there's kids, there's even just the wind blowing on the leaves. So it was a good space to be able to talk, to get to know the other person. Mm-hmm. And when there was silence, it didn't feel awkward because there was things going on. We could watch what was going on around us while we thought of something else to ask or to talk about.
Very low pressure. I like that idea. That's a good one. So Justin, I'm gonna shift gears a little bit and ask you a different question, if you don't mind. So let's talk about conflict for just a second. You know, conflict is natural in relationships, but you know, it sounds like all of you are in, you know, what they refer to as interabled relationships, right? And so, you know, there are times, you know, even if, and I don't know what your specific situations are, the three of you, but, you know, even if your significant other is not your primary caregiver, there are times when, you know, maybe you've had a horrible fight, but then you need help in the restroom, or, you know, not to get too personal, or getting into bed, or something like that. And that can be a vulnerable time to need to speak up and ask for help, frankly. Is that something that you've encountered? And if so, how do you navigate it?
Yeah, definitely. I would say that, like you said, in relationships, conflict happens.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, it's inevitable, right? And dealing with that situation where my wife is my, like, primary caregiver, right? It definitely comes up where a pride thing has to also come into factor, where you have to acknowledge, like, okay, like, and sometimes I think it helps the conflict, I think, because it's like, you can't be mad forever. We have to come to an agreement, because at the end of the day, maybe, hey, I need to get into bed, or hey, like, I need help. We both need to go get something to eat, right? Or we need to go to an event, or whatever the case may be. So it kind of does work out sometimes. I think what also needs to happen is, like, that communication, like you said earlier, in the relationship, understanding that we're going to have separate opinions, and we're going to kind of debate on things at times. But knowing that as a foundation of, hey, like, caring for one another, regardless of the situation, still needs to happen. It is important. But definitely there's been some times where that's been a learning curve for both of us, where, you know, my pride, I wouldn't accept my pride sometimes, I'll admit it, where I would end up, like, you know, whether it's staying up a little bit later because I didn't want to ask to go to bed because we just finished something, you know, finished an argument or whatever the case may be. But it definitely does happen. But I think the best thing is just to be able to communicate through it, because it's important to happen, and understanding from that standpoint.
Love it. Love it. Does anybody else have anything they want to add to that?
Well, I don't know what you guys are talking about. Sonia, yeah, I never thought, ever in a million not to. No, I agree with Justin 100%. I think that and the idea that, you know, the caregiving aspect is kind of the cheat code to conflict resolution. Because like you said, Justin, you know, like I still need to eat. I still need to have a drink or my face scratched or whatever it is. And so, you know, if we have a disagreement about whatever it may be, usually it's something really stupid and I'm the idiot who's wrong. But, you know, at the end of the day, it kind of is forced to not be able to sit there and simmer and stew, because, you know, eventually I need to have a sip of something to drink. Eventually, yeah. we're going to be eating, and she's going to be feeding me. And so, you know, it's kind of hard to continue to let that simmer.
I will say, though, there have been those silent moments of, like, helping me feed, where it's right, or helping me, you know, get into the bed. There's been those silent, like, agreements to help. Like, hey, I'm here just because, you know, I'm helping you, but we're still arguing. So
you know what? Your significant other should absolutely be your champion to help you and whatever, and they can still be pissed at you.
Exactly. Yes.
They are not either or.
Yeah, that is, yeah, happiness doesn't give you a pass for sure.
Exactly.
1,000%. And like you said, it's always our fault, right?
Absolutely.
It's always our fault. Always. Oh,
I'm so glad y'all know that.
Nora doesn't know anything about that, right, Nora? She's never in fault because she is the lady in the relationship. And so, yeah, no, Justin and I, you and I are on the same page. But...
Very nice. Well, let's talk a little bit about people outside of our relationships. And I'm going to let whoever wants to chime in here first go right ahead. But, you know, I think there's oftentimes kind of a stigma or a misunderstanding around the romantic lives of people with disabilities. Have you, any of you faced challenges in how people outside your relationship perceive your relationships? And how do you address those misconceptions to foster a more inclusive or open mindset about dating and marriage?
I know I just got done talking, and I promise I
will. Yeah, go right ahead.
Sadia will be absolutely livid if I didn't share this story because it's equal parts horrifying and hilarious. The first time I went down to visit her in Austin, you know, we did all the things, had all the fun. But one particular evening, we went to dinner, just she and I. Sort of kind of like more upscale suburb of Austin. It's like where the Bushes live and, you know, all of that neighborhood. This restaurant had a beautiful, you know, overlook. It was up on a real high hill that overlooked, you know, kind of below land. Beautiful. The hostess was very kind, put us at a table right by the window. We order our flight of wine. We're having a good time. And I'm not able to turn my head to the right. So yeah, we sit on our left. And I did not actively see this, but I was giving real-time updates. Every, I don't know, probably minute and a half or whatever, because there was a gentleman and his pregnant wife that were having dinner at the table right beside us, and she is talking about, I don't know what, I'm going to assume, you know, new baby things or whatever it was, and he is not absorbing a single syllable of what she is saying. And I was informed that the reason that he was not absorbing anything was because he could not wrap his mind around the top at the table next to his. He was like, you know, the way Soggy describes it, it was, he went from, oh, that's nice, kid in a wheelchair and his assistant out for dinner. Oh, that's weird, they ordered a flight of wine. Oh, shoot, he's kissing her. Oh my God, that's more than a kiss. It just was like the wave of emotions that this poor guy was
doing. Yeah.
And we laugh about it even to this day. I mean, I don't know if you'll have that, you know, send you.
Yeah. Justin or Nora, have you guys found yourselves in a similar situation? Or a dissimilar situation?
I've just noticed stares. At anything. I've had strangers come up to me and ask what's wrong, what happened, why, kind of. But other than that, I don't know what they're thinking. They could be thinking things. But
I would say me and my wife's situation is even a little bit more dynamic because we're an interable, interracial couple. And so with that one, too, it's my wife's timely and timely again gets asked if she's just the caregiver for me, which is, you know, depending upon the day, the time of day, that might not be the right question to ask her. It might get a little disturbing, but I think that definitely does happen, though, when it comes to the staring. Some people have had enough courage to come up and ask, which is interesting. And, you know, I think we just try to be respectful and understanding and say, like, hey, you know, like, we're a couple, this is what happened. There's actually been more recently, in the later years, where we've had our child, and he was just born, and people would come up and even ask, like, oh, wow, that's your kid? And, you know, they would, you know, just assume, and, you know, assume that, you know, we're not able to have kids or things of that nature. And so that does happen. But, you know, I think in public, we try to keep it very educational to them, because I think sometimes I think people just don't know, and it's okay if you don't know, if it's not in your day-to-day activities, or, you know, you don't see it as much. So we try to help people as much as we can, but it's definitely come up sometimes where, you know, we either, like I said, they've asked whether, hey, is that, you know, are you a caregiver to him, or what's going on there, and we have to kind of explain it.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's, you know, that's a very gracious, I mean, all of you are very gracious in your outlooks about it. And I'm glad to hear that, you know, that there hasn't been anyone that's been, you know, horribly offensive about things like this. I think the only thing I would add is, you know, in situations that have come up for me, I've, you know, taken the approach of, you know, just convincing myself that maybe they're looking because they're jealous that they're not with me. Mm-hmm. And so
Absolutely.
That's what I've chosen to believe sometimes.
Yeah, I will tell you there, I've been perceived as other individuals. When we went on our honeymoon, some of them thought that I was like a professional athlete, and she was with me. And so we kind of went along with that for a day or two. We thought that was kind of funny. And so like things like that happen, like you said, where people would stare and then we kind of go along with it. But we definitely keep it within ourselves and we laugh about it on the back
end.
Exactly.
Exactly.
I do like that you said about using it as an opportunity to like educate them. Because I think like, We can do that and keep it light and funny at the same time. Like it doesn't have to be an either or thing. It can be a both thing, right? And I think, like you said, a lot of times folks are just, it falls into two camps from what I gather. They either just simply can't comprehend it. Like, and those are kind of the folks that won't be able to be, you know, educated as easily. But there are folks who are just legitimately curious and have that curiosity. And I'm a big believer that curiosity should be rewarded and not kind of critiqued. Otherwise, how can we ever, you know, imagine learning something new?
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, you make good points, you know, because not everyone has disability as part of their life, you know, and if it's not part of, you know, I heard a saying once that I'm probably going to butcher, but it's, you know, if it doesn't exist for you, it doesn't exist. And so I think a lot of people who come into contact with something that might be new for them, while it's, you know, I want to make it clear, it's not necessarily our responsibility to educate them, but it sounds like we're all kind of like-minded in that, you know, we get it. We understand that this may be a new idea for them. And I think that if we're having fun, if we have fun with the situation, you know, then that's there, the person's going to come away from it having had a good first experience and a good exposure to something that they maybe didn't know about before. So, you know, I would throw that in too, which I think is kind of an extension of what all of you have said. So unfortunately, we're almost out of time and I've got so many more questions, but as a relationship evolves, and I think Justin, you've alluded to this in some of your other answers, but not alluded to, but you were actually quite frank about it. You know, physical or health challenges may also change over time, particularly with a neuromuscular condition. And so how have you and your partner adapted to shifting needs? You know, it's a hard thing to generalize, but, you know, whether it's emotional, physical or logistical changes that need to happen or shifts that need to happen. How do you make those shifts to ensure that your relationship remains strong throughout the changes?
Well, I think the first thing is just having a conversation about how we're feeling about that situation, and having it between us first before we let any kind of like outside factors, family, friends, you know, other opinions come in and crowd the judgment and maybe cause conflict, and or not even call conflict, but just change opinion because it can happen, right? So I think that we initially kind of just talk about it initially as a couple first, talk about what things, either A, if we feel comfortable with sharing about the situation or doing, or B, talking about, you know, how that affects you as a person. Because I think that that's super important, right? I think, you know, as I was kind of transitioning from, I think the later stage of me going from maybe a lost trans to a chair, right? It was difficult for my wife to kind of understand exactly what was going on. And like, you know, she's more of a like, how do we fix it? How do we get it resolved, right? And it wasn't going to be, you know, one size fit all kind of fix, right? So, you know, again, it comes with more communication and more just education around it. So then that way she feels comfortable understanding exactly like, hey, this is the situation that we're in, and making sure that she feels that she has all her answers, you know, that she needs to be able to kind of move forward. And then also just, I think the other aspect of it too, then is maybe letting up in other aspects of the life, right? So if she's taking on more responsibility at home, whether it's more, you know, chore responsibility, maybe we do bring in an additional caregiver to kind of relieve some of those other responsibilities and things of that nature. Yeah. So it's a balance of, as something comes in or an approach happens, how do we make adjustments to, I guess, improve and make sure everyone's comfortable with the situation.
I love that so much that, you know, it's not about one person, it's about both of you and how you're both affected and what you're both experiencing and making sure that all of those, both sides of the relationship are being accounted for. I think that that's really great. Nora, what about you? You've been married for a little while now. Is this something that you've gone through with your partner?
Yeah, definitely. Because throughout the years, there's always, I feel like, something new every few months or every year, a new symptom or just a new change, a new device I have to introduce to my life. So it's been a learning journey for both of us. And I think just us remembering that we're on the same team and that having a lot of the things that Justin said, good communication and addressing things before anyone else has time to say anything about it or before anything else, just being open with each other and especially me being very open about how I'm feeling so he understands. I have to remind myself that he can see things but he's not feeling them, so it's not the same type of understanding going through something as seeing it or hearing so it does help him be able to put himself in my shoes if I explain exactly how it makes me feel, and if I can openly tell him what things he can do. So it takes kind of the guesswork out of it for him. How he can help. I can let him know what I think. And it's kind of trial and error, maybe. So we'll both kind of brainstorm ways to both of us better adjust to the change.
That's really good. And so I have to follow up that question with asking you, you know, it sounds like communication is paramount in your relationship. Were you and your partner always were you naturally good communicators, or have you had to work on it? And do you have any advice if someone's not a naturally good communicator?
We were both open to it and open to, we still continue to learn and to better our communication and expand on it and all those things. And it helped that I'm really into psychology and I went into that field to get my degree in it. But it also, his personality style, he was open to the things I was teaching him. And like we, for example, we have him take, well, us together, the love languages quiz. It opens up a new level of conversation and does take the guess. We find things about ourselves that we didn't know. And so things like that, and having also starting from the dating stage and boyfriend girlfriend stage, I liked playing the, I don't know if it's called 21 questions, the game where we just ask back and forth, but we would play often enough to where the questions got deeper because we had to get more creative with the questions. We couldn't ask the basic what's your favorite color, what's your favorite hobby anymore. So that also, I think, gave us practice of asking deeper questions, how we word our questions, and being open to answering everything, that nothing was off topic. We tend to address things or talk about things before we need to. It's easier, or after, if something happens. I know I still struggle. Well, I struggled with, if I get upset, my go-to is like, I don't want to talk. I just want to close off. I just want to, wasn't sometimes even anything that he did. It was just like, he didn't read my mind, or he didn't read my mind.
I hate it when they don't read your mind.
We're sorry.
You guys are so good.
Yeah, but being aware of it and then apologizing and fixing it. So it's just, I guess my advice would be, don't be scared to communicate just because you don't know how to. Practice, it will get better and it will get a lot easier. And it will prevent a lot of conflict, a lot of misunderstandings, and a lot of things that are just not needed in the relationship.
Makes such good wisdom and advice, which leads me to the last question that I'm going to have time to ask all of you. And I think that we just need to all hang out every Wednesday afternoon and be best friends, because you guys are awesome. No pressure, but I am going to ask you as a parting gift to our readers, Kale, what's your best piece of it? And I'm going to come to each of you, but Kale, what's your best piece of advice that you would give our community or our listeners who maybe is just beginning to date or, you know, maybe is struggling in their dating life?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing that is universal is just understanding that the two basic foundational things: A, that you are indeed worthy and deserving of that sort of connection. And if you don't believe that, that kind of leads to the second foundational thing, which is finding that sort of acceptance for yourself in yourself before you can help to have somebody else find that in you as well. And I think that's true of anything, whether you have a disability or not.
Yeah.
You know, I think that covers kind of the gamut of the human experience, right? Which is, you know, you need to recognize that you are valuable as a human, and you need to recognize that in order for other people to see that you are valuable and worthy, you have to be able to understand that and truly believe that in yourself. And, you know, MBA community has a whole bunch of amazing resources, people that you can connect with, people that are going through similar experiences as you, that can give you that feedback. And so you don't have to do that alone, but in order to find love, you have to find the love for yourself first. Yeah.
Love it. Love it. And I have to agree. I think genuinely, I think this is the best community in the whole entire world. You know, I love everyone that I've gotten the pleasure to know, all of you included. So, Nora, let's go to you next. What's your best piece of advice?
I go back to communication. I guess and I've seen has worked the most and has helped the most, and not being afraid to put yourself out there. Doesn't matter any type of disability, it shouldn't interfere with dating. We're humans, so, and also it's okay to ask for help during dates. The biggest obstacle is really just putting yourself out there, whether it's dating or being vulnerable in a committed relationship, whatever it may be. It's the first step is the hardest, but it does get easier, especially with practice, whether it's dating, practicing communication, practicing being vulnerable.
So true. And I am going to re-emphasize what you said about asking for help on dates. If they have a problem with that, you probably don't want a next date.
1,000%.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I love that. And communication is the secret sauce for sure. Justin, I'm going to give you the final word. What's your best?
I would say, I would say control what you can control. I think that's the biggest thing. Control the controllables. That's what I would say. If it's so that way you can be your best version of yourself on that date. So that way it's strictly about the connection, whether it's a genuine one or not, right? If it means that making sure that you're in an accessible spot for dinner, right? Let's do that, right? Or if it means that, like, hey, like Nora said, like having it in the park or going to a movie theater, whatever it is, right? Finding something that's, you know, a comfortable setting for you to be truly yourself. That way it'll allow the date to actually take place. And then you can be able to make that relationship either flourish or like understand that, like, hey, maybe it's just not compatible. But I think that you control those things first, initially. And then the other things that are uncontrollable, you get to a place and you find out the elevator's not working that day, right? Let that be a part of the story then, you know, and let that kind of flourish into what what could be, right? If those are things that are uncontrollable, that are out of your hands. So just do that, and then you go from there.
Amazing. You guys are absolutely fantastic. I can't thank you enough for spending part of your afternoon with me today and for sharing your wisdom with our listeners. And happy Valentine's Day to all of you.
Happy Valentine's
Day.
Thank you for listening. For more information about the guests you heard from today, go check them out at mda.org/podcast. And to learn more about the Muscular Dystrophy Association, the services we provide, how you can get involved, and to subscribe to Quest Magazine or to Quest Newsletter, please go to mda.org/quest. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd be grateful if you'd leave a review. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button so we can keep bringing you great content and maybe share it with a friend or two. Thanks, everyone. Until next time. Go be the light we all need in this world.